Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, crazy martinis for you, as usual. And, Jim, our good martini is someone we're going to be careful with, given that yesterday our crazy martini was the Associated Press going too far and suggesting that Virginia Democratic gubernatorial nominee Terry McAuliffe was being charged by the federal government for lying about an investment plan he was involved with. But the more we actually learn about the truth of this thing, it doesn't look very good for McAuliffe either. At the center of this is a guy named Joseph Caramadre. He donated to McAuliffe's campaign in 2009. McAuliffe donated thousands of dollars to this investment plan, which essentially involved the theft of the identities of terminally ill patients. And McAuliffe says he had no idea that's where the money was actually going. Now, the attorney for Mr. Caramadre, Robert Flanders, defending his client as a savvy businessman who seized an opportunity to benefit his clients as well as dying people in their time of need. Everything, he said, was fully disclosed to everyone involved, the terminally ill and investors alike. Now, given the fact that the lawyer thinks everything this Caramadre character did was on the up and up, who knows how much transparency there was here, Jim, but this certainly can't be good for Terry McAuliffe.
Get used to that sentence. Terry McAuliffe insisted he knew nothing about what was going on, because if he becomes governor, you're probably going to hear that a lot. In fact, back when I was covering Bob Torricelli, I created a macro in my word processing program to just say, Torricelli spokeswoman Deborah DeShong vehemently denied the allegations, because I knew I was just going to write that sentence over and over again in the course of covering Torricelli. It's entirely possible Terry McAuliffe didn't know anything that was going on. There are a lot of things that Terry McAuliffe doesn't know. Earlier this year, when he there was a Northern Virginia independent business group that endorsed Cuccinelli, they got unbelievable pressure on them, including other Democratic lawmakers and allies of McAuliffe, saying, "Look, if you don't endorse him, we are going to punish you in the state legislature. We are going to, you're not going to get any of your agenda through. We are never going to forget, basically kind of threatening, endorse our guy or the government's going to come down on you like a ton of bricks." When asked about this, McAuliffe said, "I had no idea that anybody was saying these sorts of things." This is going to be the pattern with Terry McAuliffe, is that he never knows anything. Plausible deniability is what he's all about. And in the case of when he started defending coal regulations that would basically shut down the coal industry and basically make it impossible to ever build another coal plant again, he blurted out his support of it. And you could kind of tell from his answer, which I believe I'm quoting from memory, so you may want to go back and double check. But it was something like, if there are problems, we should go and look at them, but I support it. Without able to go into any what the details are, what the problems are, et cetera. So I look at this. It's entirely possible Terry McAuliffe went to this guy and said, "What's this thing? Dead people, dying people? Hey, if you can turn it to cash, go right ahead," and didn't ask any questions and didn't want to know how his profits were being made or something like that. That's quite plausible. Or maybe McAuliffe is much savvier than he lets on, and he did know about all this stuff. We'll have to see. But I think what's interesting is that the idea of "I knew nothing about what was going on" isn't really as exculpatory as McAuliffe would like it to be. And I think it's, with only weeks before Election Day, it is good to see that the press starting to take a look at McAuliffe and recognizing who he is and what he stands for and what kind of leader Terry McAuliffe would end up being.
Okay, on to martini number two now, Jim, and Harry Reid. This was his rambling on the Senate floor with respect to the Senate debate over the death gratuity bill that Republicans thought they had already approved in the bill to fund the military just after the government shut down. The administration said no, it was not covered by that. So $100,000 is now being put up by folks like the Fisher House. Donald Trump's even suggested he might contribute to that. So the House then specifically passed legislation to pay the death gratuity. And then the Senate, by the time it got to them, Harry Reid says, "Oh no, we didn't need that."
Secretary Hagel issued a statement announcing the Department of Defense had entered an agreement, as my friend said, with the organization that my friend mentioned. So the death benefit issues has been resolved. The Department of Defense stepped forward and took care of everything. And so this issue is largely moot. It's clear the action on this legislation is now just for show here.
Jim, no matter how you spin this, it's pretty clear that the Defense Department didn't solve this. The Fisher House solved this. And to suggest that the Fisher House paying the bills for these families solves the issue seems pretty insane.
Harry Reid's made a lot of awful comments over the years, but here's a couple of things here. First of all, The House passes the Pay Our Military Act, which basically says pay the military, give them whatever they need. But also keep in mind that, you know, Chuck Hagel is authorized to bring in any civilian employee that he deems necessary for necessary military operations, and that's what he did about a couple days into the shutdown. But the Pentagon insisted that the way the, you know, the Pay Our Military Act was written, they didn't have the authorization for what they call the death gratuity. It's about $100,000 that goes to a family that has lost a member serving for our country. By the way, there is a separate like $13,000 gratuity or a payment designed to help with the burial and burial services and things like that. The House believed that by passing this legislation, they'd cover all that stuff. And the Pentagon was able to say, well, technically that's under section, and there's a four-digit number I can't remember here. That stuff's under that section. You only authorize this section. I suppose the Pentagon may be able to say that technically that is true. They may have hewed to the letter of the law, but I think it's pretty obvious that the spirit of the law was give our members of the military what they need. And what's more is that as of Friday of last week, Congressman Joe Wilson called up Hagel and said, we understand there might be an issue with this. Tell us what you need. And there was no response. Over the weekend, five members in uniform are killed. And by Monday, they're starting to say, we can't pay out this death gratuity because of those mean, nasty folks on Capitol Hill and the shutdown. Well, needless to say, Joe Wilson is pretty damn PO'd because they are lying. They said, look, we passed this bill to pay for this stuff, and you're saying you don't have the authorization. So yesterday in the House, they passed this thing to say, look, we shouldn't have to say this twice, but you are authorized to pay out death gratuities during the government shutdown. And Harry Reid is saying, well, we don't need to do this because the Pentagon took care of it. Well, no. Think about what kind of person you have to be to look at the Pay Our Military Act and say, well, this doesn't, you know, they may have meant for us to pay it, but we don't really have the authorization. All right. I mean, in his defense yesterday, one of the Pentagon controllers said, well, you don't want us to break the law. And the answer on this one is, yes, we do. And here's the thing. It's not breaking the law. Right. It's basically saying, look, the Pay Our Military Act was meant to pay the military. And these death gratuity is considered part of the pay. They're saying, well, no, technically it's not under code such and such. No. What kind of a moron do you have to be to not think that Congress wanted to pay the death gratuity? This thing passed unanimously, every Republican, every Democrat in both houses. So Harry Reid to say that, you know, so then that's when this private charity stepped in and said, well, we'll cover the costs of transporting the families to Dover for when the caskets are removed. But it's kind of ridiculous because that's not really a solution. That's charity stepping in and being kind. But that's not what the $100,000 is meant to take care of. It's not the only cost it's supposed to cover. So they are playing politics with this. It really is abominable. And for Harry Reid to kind of suggest that this was, you know, resolved by Chuck Hagel is asinine and 100% the opposite of what had happened. And in fact, it was the folks under Chuck Hagel who created this convoluted issue in the first place by not interpreting the Pay Our Military Act as covering the death gratuity. Anyway, and rant there, Greg.
Exactly. Okay, on to martini number three now, the crazy martini, and the Truckers for the Constitution. If they're not already on the Washington Beltway, they're on their way, and their idea is to basically commandeer the Beltway Friday and for part of the weekend to point out what they think is a drifting away from the Constitution. You look at some of their ideas, Jim, they're upset about Obamacare, National Defense Authorization Act, Department of Homeland Security intrusions, TSA. They think the White House is violating the War Powers Act. So a lot of conservatives would look at it and say, yeah, that sounds pretty good. But a huge part of this is also about their ongoing concerns about the president's eligibility. They're claiming members of Congress tried as early as 2003 to get Article 2 of the Constitution changed so Obama could be president. When it comes to the War Powers Act, and all of this is from Betsy Woodruff, who got this documentation from the group, that the U.S. is taking military orders from the U.N. Security Council and that somehow the administration is involved in exposing and administering experimental psychotropic and mind-altering drugs for control over soldiers during secret clandestine operations. I think those latter two issues might undercut their message just a little bit.
You would, Greg. You would, because they got to you. Now, this is really unfortunate because I'm sure these truckers are not bad guys. I'm sure they genuinely believe that they want to help the country. They're worried about Obamacare, as a whole bunch of people are. They're worried about a disconnected leadership in Washington and what they see as, you know, pointless bickering. However, my first objection when I first learned about this was I was starting to call them the Truckers United for a Truckers United for a more difficult commute for people who have nothing to do with the shutdown. which is, you know, look, we saw this back during the Vietnam protests. The Vietnam protesters wanted to lie down in the street to make D.C. commuters more aware of their cause. Well, it's the Vietnam friggin' war. Everybody's aware of it. Thank you very much. You don't need to raise awareness. And you want people to know that you're angry about it. Well, that's swell. We know you're angry. You can do that on the sidewalk, okay? By trying to louse up people's commutes, you're not winning them over. You're not persuading them. You're not, shifting their views towards yours. You're just lousing up their day. And that's not protesting. That's a tantrum. That's being a jerk. And I don't like it when Occupy Wall Street did it. I don't like it when these guys are doing it. So even if they had the most noble set of priorities in the world, look, there's not a single member of the Senate or Congress or certainly the administration who's going to be delayed by slowing down the Beltway. People who work at that level in Washington live closer to Washington. The only people you're going to louse up are the people who work in the rest of government and other jobs and that stuff. And then somebody said, D.C., I started arguing with people with this on Twitter, and they said D.C. starts to feel pain. This is like a late hit on RG3 in order to send a message to Washington, because he has about as much influence over how Washington operates as all the commuters on the Beltway today. This is just inflicting pain for the sake of inflicting pain, and it is not what I think these guys want to stand for. This is not because the folks who are having their commute loused up today have nothing to do with all the problems they're complaining about. And then, of course, giving a birther-heavy claim about psychotropic drugs and stuff like that just makes them look like a bunch of nut jobs and undermines the noble causes they're fighting for, i.e. Obamacare, runaway spending, and things like that. And second rant of the day.
Very quickly, before Jim's inbox and Twitter feed get completely swamped, we should point out that also this weekend there's the Million Veterans March. I'm not sure if that's exactly the term they're using, but they're basically going to demand access to the memorials. 100% behind that, right?
Yeah, that's fine. That's basically – look, that's focused upon the people who you actually have a problem with, i.e. the National Park Service and the Department of the Interior and people up and down the chain who are saying this government shutdown requires us to shut down memorials that have never been shut down before. Like, that's fine. That's focused. If you just decide, well, I'm going to find something within the geographical boundaries of Washington, D.C., and I'm going to mess it up in order to send a signal, you're not sending a signal to anything. Or maybe you're sending a signal, just a very different one than you intended, about your inability to focus on the actual goal you're fighting for. Hmm.
Jim, we'll leave
it there. Let my EMUX fill up. Let it go. I know this is going to irk some people. People want to stand with these truckers regardless of what the actual impact of their protest is.
Jim, have a great long weekend. We'll talk to you on Tuesday.
See you Tuesday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus for Radio America. There will probably be a Monday edition of the 3 Martini Lunch. I'll be joined hopefully by another outstanding member of the National Review staff. And as just mentioned, Jim and I will be together again on Tuesday. Please join us. Have a great weekend, everyone, and join us again for the next edition of the 3 Martini Lunch.